Bhagavad Gita is like a powder keg. Like if you have a barrel full of gunpowder or dynamite, and all you have to do is a little match or even a little spark, and boom, there is a big explosion and everything around it gets destroyed for hundreds of yards. Similarly, every verse in the Bhagavad Gita is like that powder keg, full of power. And that's what Gurudev says. And he says, just a little spark of wisdom from the teacher, a little spark of knowledge, and this verse explodes, where all our ignorance, our ego gets destroyed. You are completely naked, as it were. You have nothing to cover you, no ego, nothing to hide behind, nothing to protect you, because your true nature gets exposed. And it's high time for you to wake up and realize, and that's why then we have nothing to hide, nothing to protect us, because this little ego that was protecting me, this perceiver, feeler, thinker, is blasted by this knowledge, because the Gita tells us. And that's why I enjoy studying and, you know, discussing the Gita, because it really opens up your eyes, as you know, because we have been sleeping in the sleep of ignorance. That's why in the Guru Stotram it says, Agnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. She says, I prostrate to the Guru. My eyes were closed with the darkness of ignorance. And in that he put the surma. You know, in India we put that surma, that little black powder. So with that powder of knowledge, he has opened up my eyes to what the truth is. And that's why I prostrate to the Guru. So that's what each verse of the Bhagavad Gita is powerful. But as I had said last week, these three verses, the one we did last week, 54, actually we took almost an hour to do that, 54, 55 and 56 of the 18th chapter, even among those powder kegs are very, very potent. And if these three verses, if you memorize, if you study, I hope all of you have, you know, the commentary. So read it again and again and bring it into your life. You know, your work is done. And if you wish to hear this commentary again, Tony has been putting online. I have said that. So because what I speak is not mine, it's I basically read four different commentaries and try to summarize that. So if you wish to listen to that again, you're welcome. You can go to just Google Talks by Dr. Anil Mehta. And then there's a website called First Power where you can read these, listen to them again. Because I find for myself, repeated listening is very important. That's why week after week when we come, it strengthens, you know, this knowledge. So that's why listening is very important. Listening means including reading. You know, that is also Shravana, listening, and then subsequently bringing it into your life. So let's go to verse number, like last week we talked about verse number 54, where they said a person who Brahma Bhuta, who has become close to becoming Brahman, reaching close to Brahman, he becomes peaceful. Na shochati na kangshati, has no desires, no sorrow. Why? Because he or she discovers the inner joy, inner completeness, and then sama sarveshu bhuteshu, among all beings, sees that one. And mad bhaktim labhate param, Krishna says, such a person is my devotee who sees all. And that is the true bhakti. And we'll talk a little more about bhakti in the next verse. So verse number 55. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Yavanyaschasmi tatvatah. Tato mam tatvato jnatva. Vishate tadanantaram. So bhaktya. So with bhakti, this is the third case, instrumental, through bhakti, mam abhijanati, Krishna says, he comes to know me. Abhijanati means knows me very well, knows me clearly, closely. What does he know? Ya, वान यश चास्मि तत्वतः. सो या वान यह, सो यावान मीन्स वॉट एंड यह मीन्स हु. सो वॉट एंड हु अस्मि आई एम तत्वतः. कृष्ण सेज सच अ पर्सन नोज वॉट आई एम एंड हु आई एम इन एसेंस, नॉट ओनली एज कृष्णा द फ्लूट प्लेयर ऑफ वृंदावन, कृष्णा द सन ऑफ देवकी एंड वसुदेव, कृष्णा द टीचर ऑफ द गीता, बट ऑल्सो नोज मी एज इन एसेंस वॉट इज माई ट्रू नेचर. सच अ पर्सन कम्स टू नो एंड देन ततो एंड देन माम तत्वतो ज्ञात्वा, देन हैविंग नोन मी तत्वत इन एसेंस विशते तदनंतरम, विशते देन दैट पर्सन एंटर्स, देन तदनंतरम मीन्स शॉर्टली आफ्टर दैट ही एंटर्स मी. So, what is knowing Krishna in essence and what is entering into Krishna, this we'll talk about. So, first he talks again about bhakti. And bhakti, you know, we understand as going to the temple, offering flowers, you know, doing the aarti or lighting a candle in the church or doing some rituals. That's very good, you know, but that alone is not bhakti. And that's where people think, you know, went to the temple, did my puja, I'm done. Or in the morning, quickly you go, do your aarti, 2 minutes, okay, ho gaya, finished. Okay, God, now we are done. I'll see you tomorrow morning. So our idea of bhakti is like that. Krishna, in the 12th chapter, which is the bhakti yoga, where we think, you know, he's talking about bhakti, he will say, how many times does he go to my temple? How many times does he offer me flowers? Nothing. There is not even a word about that. In that whole 12th chapter, nowhere he says, how many times does he go to my temple? How many times does he offer flowers? How many times does he do aarti? Bola hi nahi hai usme. So these are what he says. What is the criteria of a bhakta? So Krishna says, you know who is my bhakta? Adveshta sarva bhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankaraha samadukha sukha kshami. So Krishna says, who is my bhakta? Adveshta sarva bhutanam. He doesn't hate anybody. Maitra karuna evacha. And not only he doesn't hate anybody, but he is friendly to all and compassionate to all. Nirmamo nirahankarha. She has no eye or mind. No eye or mind. Everything is the Lord's. Samadukha sukha kshami. And the same in joy and sorrow and forgiving. And then he goes on, santushta satatam yogi yatatma dridha nishchaya mai arpit mano buddhihi yo mad bhakta same priyaha. He says, who is the devotee that is dear to me? Santushta satatam, always thankful, grateful, contented. Yatatma, mind and intellect controlled. Dridha nishchaya, firm determination to reach me. Mai arpit mano buddhihi, mind and intellect always given to me. Yo mad bhakta same priya. So that is my devotee. That is who I love. So I'm not saying that one should not offer flowers, go to the temple. That's very good. It's better than sitting home and watching TV, obviously. Or it's wonderful because your mind gets purified. But then that alone is not bhakti. One should not be satisfied with that. After you come out of the temple, how do you treat other people? That determines whether you are a devotee or not. What do you do with your life? How much time do you spend in his service? That's what he says. Mad bhaktya. So being devoted to me, mam abhijanati. Abhijanati means knows me very clearly. Yavan yaha asmi tatvatah. So what and who I am, Krishna says, tatvatah. Knows me in essence, really knows. So there are two ways to know Krishna. One, of course, you know, the saguna, as we said, the form, you know, Krishna in the form, playing the flute, you know, with the blue garments, with the, you know, more mukut, or Jesus, you know, on the cross, or Buddha sitting in meditation, or Ram Chandraji with his bow, or Shiva in meditation, Mother Durga. So those are the saguna way of knowing God. So that is good. But when he says tatvatah, when he says know me in essence, what he's talking about is the nirguna, the formless. So one is God with form, and then one is God with formless, what Jesus called as the Father in heaven. Now, Jesus we know, but there are no pictures of Father in heaven. There is no way of, no description, because it is formless. The Father in heaven is all-pervading. That is what we call Brahman, what the Muslims call Allah. That's why Muslims don't like form, because they say that God is formless. And of course, they go to the other extreme where they actually destroy idols and all. But their thinking is to some extent correct, that ultimately formless. Because if you think of God as form, that is good. But then, and that is good for us to develop a relationship of love. But then you limit God. Okay, that alone is God, you know, and then everything else is not. And that's what creates violence and fanaticism. Even in Jainism, they do not worship a form. And even in Buddha was against idols. It's unfortunate that Buddha was against idols. And now every Buddhist temple has huge idols of Buddha, 20 feet, 60 feet. So the point of the matter is that one should see God in both form and formless and know him as the formless. And what is the formless? It is the substratum. It is the essence. It is the essence of all of us. Every one of us is that formless Brahman. That is the Om. That is the consciousness. And the BMI is the form. So this form, I have Anil or Satish or, you know, whatever my name is, male or female, that is the visible form. But the unmanifest, which is the true nature, is the Om, the Brahman, the consciousness, which is a substratum of this whole universe. Not only the living, but even the chair, even the carpet, even the fan, everything is that consciousness expressing in different forms. But it is the support, it is the substratum, it is something you can't see. Like in an ocean, when you see the waves and the currents and the bubbles and the whirlpools and the froth, everything is the form, appearance. But underneath, the wave is miles and miles deep, you know, hundreds of miles deep and extending for thousands of miles. So what you see is the very small part of the wave of the ocean, but what you don't see underneath is the unmanifest, which is the support from which all waves arise, all froth arises, all bubbles arise from that ocean. So similarly, it is the ocean of consciousness in which we all are living. That's why they say God, you don't say God is in me, we are in God. Brahman is in every one of us, but is also outside. So we are in this ocean of consciousness. And one who recognizes and then not only knows, but also experiences. So one is knows, but one is lives that knowledge. It's like a person learns management, right? Becomes an MBA and he's very proud. You know, I have the degree MBA from Harvard or Yale or something. And then they put him in the field as a junior manager of some branch. And now he has to deal with people and deal with finance. Then he realizes that what I studied in college is a very small part. It's not going to help me. Now I have to learn and apply this knowledge. And ultimately, when he can apply this knowledge, then only he truly becomes a manager, not just by getting an MBA. This reminds me of a little story. Actually, there was a grocery chain run by us. I think it was two or three branches. I forget the name now. So there was this owner and he had been running it very successfully for many years. It was a small grocery. It was not a small store. It was a good size store, but there were only like two or three stores by that name in town. And so then his son came, you know, who was an MBA from some USC or something. And he says, Dad says, you know, my son is an MBA. He had spent so much money to let him now run the store. And so this MBA started running these two or three grocery stores. And we used to go there. And I went to the store one time and there was this old man who was talking, you know, who I had seen him for many times. So I said, what happened? You know, half the things are missing. The shelves are empty. He says, "Sir, there is this new manager. He's the son of our owner." I said, what happened? He says, "You know what? He's putting all these computer formulas, supply and demand. You know, if we only things that are sold, we have to stock, run it efficiently." And he said, "The people have stopped coming, and ultimately that stores went into bankruptcy." You know why? Because learning is one thing, but then how do you apply that in your life? So similarly, knowing that Brahman is everything is okay, and I am also that, everybody is that, but do you live that? Do you bring it into your life? How you deal with others? How you deal with yourself? Am I acting like I am a divine individual, or am I acting like a devil? You know, am I? So that, unless you are changing your behavior, so that's why he says, Tatvata, he knows me, not only in words, but becomes me. That's why in the Mundak Upanishad, it says very beautifully, Brahma with Brahmaiva Bhavati. Knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. You cannot know Brahman, you cannot know God with your intellect, but you can become that. You can become. The Ramakrishna Paramhans, very beautifully, he gives a beautiful example. He says there was a salt doll, and she said, "I want to know the depth of the ocean. I want to know how deep the ocean is." So this salt doll, made out of salt, she jumps into the ocean to find its depth. And what happens? She merges. She becomes one. Then and only then she can know the depth of the ocean. When she becomes the ocean, when she says, "I am the ocean." As long as she says, "I am a salt doll and I wish to know," it's never possible. So as long as you say that I am so and so and I wish to know Brahman, no matter how many books you read, how many Upanishads you read, how many Brahma Sutras you have memorized, until that ego is gone, the separateness has to go. One has to become that. So my ignorance has to go, my ego has to go, and ultimately that alone is, that's why Jesus said, you know, "Thy will be done, O Lord, not mine, not mine." That is one step. The second step is, thy will and my will, nothing, doesn't exist. Thou alone. There is no thy will and my will. No, thou alone exists. So that is a step higher than that. So that is called Tatvata, who I am and what I am. He knows me. Tatvata, in essence. And then he says, Tato mam tatvato jnatva vishate tadanantanam. He enters into me. Now this word enters is kind of confusing, you know. What do we mean by enter? Okay, I was in the hallway, I opened the door and I entered this room. So enter, does that mean that God is somewhere and then I walk into it and I enter? No. Enter is, does not mean that. What it means, and actually I cannot enter. You know, that's what all the great mystics say. All the, if you read the description of their final state, it's so similar. Whether you read Upanishads, whether you read the saints, Christian saints, whether you read Eknath Ishwaran, whoever you read, when you read that description of the final state, it's like they have exact same words. And what it is entering is, you still your mind and turn it inwards, as we did today, you know, what we did in the beginning of the class. Do that every day. Maybe just sit for 5 or 10 minutes, breathe deeply and go deep within. That is meditation. So when your mind is purified, when there are no vasanas, there is no selfishness, no anger, greed, and your thoughts are stilled in sitting in meditation, and your ego is gone. There is no arrogance, no ego, no selfishness. That alone is my goal. That alone, that has to become. That alone is my goal. And in that state, when you enter the silence, they describe it. I have not, of course, experienced it, so please don't ask me. But what I have read, they say that they describe it as there is a door and you have to go there and wait. And you knock. Knock means you are waiting there patiently. Again, you're no rush. You go there and wait. One day it doesn't open. Second day it doesn't open. Then slowly a little sliver of light you will see. Partially the door has opened. And one of the mystics describes, He says, I patiently waited, and I waited, and the door didn't open, and finally I got despaired. My intellect says, you can't get it anymore. You can never go through that door to reach that state. And he said, that's when I remembered my guru, and it was my guru's grace and my guru's teaching that finally my guru opened the door for me. And then, even then, you cannot enter. He has to pull you in. He has to lift you up. You cannot walk into that door. You just have to wait. And then that power, that essence pulls you. That is called entering, where you are dragged, pulled, lifted, whatever words you want to use, to that oneness of that state. That's why Krishna in the 12th chapter, he says, Tesham aham samuddharta mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha mai aveshit chetasam. So one who says mai aveshit, one whose mind and intellect is filled with me, then I lift him up from this mrityu samsara. I am the one. So the Lord can only lift us. Our job is go close to him and then just wait, knock on the door and say, Bhagavan, I'm here. Now you open the door. And when we are ready, he will welcome us. But that same mystic says, he says, not even a trace of desire has to be there. When you are in that, not even the desire that I have to meet him, even that is gone. There is no trace of desire. Complete silence, complete peace. Even a smallest trace of desire will take you away from that state. So when you're sitting in meditation, even that desire that I have to realize ultimately goes away. And in that brief silence, in that depth of that silence, when you reach that state, then he picks you up. So that is called entering. I'm not trying to scare people or tell them it's difficult. Even the path is beautiful. As you get closer to the truth, you experience such tremendous joy. I'm sure all of you who are on the spiritual path, the more you read, the more you meditate, the more you apply that, the more joy you will get. Especially, I find that when I sit for meditation, I try to meditate an hour every morning. And when the mind becomes still, waves of joy arise from within. Where did that come from? I don't know. But you become so, prafullit man ho jata. Your mind becomes full of joy. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. There is nothing to be joyful about. It's cold, it's dark, it's raining. No, but the heart is full of joy. Why? Because the moment the mind becomes still, it experiences that inner peace, that inner silence. And that is the joy of this path. So the more you go on it, the more you will enjoy that, and more the worldly small things won't interest you anymore. If somebody doesn't call me for a party, very good. I'm very glad I didn't get invited. I can spend more time in study. I can spend more time Friday evening. Otherwise, say, "Arey, kya karna hai? No, let's go to somebody's house. Let's go for a party." Nothing. Why do you? So what I'm saying is, it's not that you don't go to parties or you become antisocial, but the joy that you used to get becomes less because I have discovered something higher. I'll talk about in the next verse that there is an internal change. So that is called Vishate Tadanantaram. And such a person even goes beyond death, because even death cannot scare him anymore. Death cannot frighten him. There is a beautiful story about death. This person comes out of LAX airport. He walks out and he looks above and he sees this dark cloud. And then he recognizes that this is Yamaraja. He was that perceptive. He saw Lord Death standing right over his head, hovering over him. He said, "Oh God, he has come to take me." You know the story is Yamaraja will come and take you. And not only that, Yamaraja was looking at him and looking very surprised. So he said, "Why is, first of all, he's looking at me. He wants to take me. Why is he surprised?" So he said, "I have to escape. Let me get out of here." So he runs back into the airport, buys a ticket to New York. He says, "How far can I go from LA, New York?" So he buys a ticket instantly, credit card, gets into the plane, reaches New York, you know, in 5 hours. Ah, I'm far away. Yamraj cannot get me now. So he walks out of the airport, New York airport, Kennedy airport. He takes a taxi, and as his taxi is moving out of the terminal onto the freeway, a drunk driver comes, bangs him from behind. The taxi driver and he are both killed. So then, of course, he's dead. So Yamaraja is taking him. And as he's going up, he says, Yamaraja, I saw you in LAX. He says, yeah. So Yamaraja, why were you surprised to see me? He says, I was surprised because I was thinking in 5 hours, you are supposed to die in New York. And what are you doing in LA? I was wondering, how are you going to get to New York in 5 hours? You're not supposed to. So the point is that, you know, we are also afraid of death, but this person goes beyond death, because even death cannot. Because when you have realized you are that immortal consciousness, then death is no fear for such a person. He is not afraid of death. That's why that movie Anand, if you saw, you know, all of you have seen that. And it was based on a book called Death Be Not Proud. And this hero has no fear, even when he knows he has cancer. He says, lymphosarcoma of the intestine. Wow, what a disease to have. And everybody else around him is crying, but he is laughing. So that is the state of this wise person who can laugh even in the state of death. And what happens to us, Krishna says, Bahu naam janma naam ante, jnanvan maam prapadyate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. He says, Bahu naam janma naam ante. In the Gita, he says, after many, many lives, a wise person reaches me. And what is his understanding? Vasudeva Sarvamiti sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. There are very few people who see everybody as Krishna or everybody as Jesus. Most of us don't. Most of us live a life, Swami Ishwarananda ji says, what we do, I like somebody. After a while, either that person loses interest or I lose interest, or I lose it and then I say, oh, not this, now the next person or the next thing. And so searching for completeness, we die like a worm. That's exactly his word. He says, you die like a worm, and then next life, again you start your journey, again you live that same life, again die like a worm. Krishna says, how many lifetimes are you going to do that? He says, how long? Bahu naam janma naam ante. It's okay. Once you have realized, at least now start changing your life. And that is the goal one has to adopt. Another beautiful example I read from Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. He says, you go to a sweet shop and you ask him, what is sweet in this shop? Say, are you a fool? Everything is sweet. Everything you touch, laddu, jalebi, gulab, everything. Or you go to a chocolate shop, you know, and what is sweet in this, in See's candy? He says, are you a fool? Everything you touch is sweet. So similarly, a wise person, everything he touches is that Lord, that Mahatma. And the example they give is like a river. When she wants to know the ocean, as we said, like the salt, all the river merges into the ocean, becomes the ocean. So you and I have to merge into that state. Merge does not mean that you end or you disappear or you die, but you become one with him, and then such a person works as a saint, as a realized Mahatma, practicing this devotion and becoming an instrument of the Lord. I had talked about doing some exercises. So one of the beautiful exercises is, you know, that they say God is Sat, Chit and Anand. Sat means existence, Chit means knowledge or consciousness, and Anand means bliss. So they say when you see Sat, when you see anything exists, that is Brahman. So this chair exists, that is Brahman. The carpet exists, the fan exists, that is Brahman. And then what is Chit? Chit is anybody that is alive. So like the plants are alive, humans are alive, birds are alive. So when you see the chair, that is consciousness, Sat. Now that is Sat, not consciousness, existence. And when you see living beings, that is Chit. Sat, Chit. And Anand. Anand is once you experience that I am that, I am not only Sat, I not only exist, but I am conscious. So I'm Sat and Chit. And Anand means I am infinite, because that Brahman is infinite. So when Brahman is me, then I become infinite. So that experience of Sat Chit Anand, then you say not only Brahman is Sat Chit Anand, but I am also that. So that maybe we can spend 2 minutes just in silence experiencing that. Look at the chairs, look at the carpet, they are all Sat. And look at the beings, they are all Chit, they are all conscious. And that understanding is bliss. So maybe let's do this exercise for 2 minutes. Just concentrate on that and experience that. Wasn't that nice? It's beautiful. So practice that at home or wherever you are. See the Sat, that is God, and Chit is also that, and that is me. Next week we'll try a different exercise. So similar. A lot of these I get from Swami Bodhatmanandaji's commentary. His commentaries are so beautiful when you're listening to Upanishads and all. So a lot of these ideas come to me from God. So that is verse number 55. Any comments? Yes.
You mentioned that you listened to 4 different commentaries.
Yes.
Which are they?
Oh, sure. One is, of course, the written one, Swami Chinmayanandaji's, that you all have, the green book. And then I have his audio tape, where he has done the whole Bhagavad Gita, 72 audio tapes of 90 minutes each. So I have written them down by hand. Took me a few years to write them. So I have notebooks. So I read those. Then I read Eknath Ishwaran. Eknath Ishwaran, his commentaries are sometimes not very close to the subject, but he gives good modern examples. So I get examples from him. And then the fourth one, some Acharya of Chinmaya Mission, either Swami Ishwarananda or Bodhatmananda or Shantananda. So wherever I find, so each verse, I have 4 different commentaries. So I read those.
Have confusion or are confused about the knowledge portion,
mm-hmm.
meaning, oh, I know this, so I'm better than thou attitude, versus the essence
mm-hmm.
you talked about. Is he talking about the same thing?
Yes, he's talking about exactly the same thing, that to know superficially is one. But to experience it. That's why Sri Krishna says, the Mahatma Su Durlabha, the one who knows is very hard to find. There are only very few in this world who know that. Yeah, same thing he was talking. To know in essence, yes. Yes.
When you read this, when I read this, and I listen to the lectures, and I comment, and everything seems okay, I can try to understand it. But when you see somebody treating somebody else wrong, or they treat you wrong, you just cannot follow the same thing. Like, how long does it take? Like, lifetime? How many lifetimes?
For us or for the other person?
For us.
I think at least the fact that you are aware of that. See, previously we didn't even know about it. Before we started reading, we didn't know. So now at least you have become aware that I'm getting disturbed by what is happening. Previously, you didn't even know that. Then slowly what will happen is, I asked Swami Chidananda one time, how do I know I am progressing spiritually? He says things that used to bother you before don't bother you anymore. So don't bother you means not that you are not concerned about, but if somebody is being mean to me, that's his problem. I am not affected by that. If you can get to that state where then afterwards, not only you don't feel angry at that person, you feel sorry for that person. That look at the negative karmas. This person is accumulating so much negative karmas. So if whether he's being mean to somebody else or to me or to whatever, you know, you see so many examples, people who are so crooked and who are so corrupt and all. After a while, instead of anger, you feel compassion for them, that these people, oh Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So you feel sorry for such a person, that look at all the negative karmas. And I, even if suppose somebody said something to me rudely or arrogantly, does it make me any different? No, because I am Brahman. I am not a, it does not mean you become like a stone, but you say it's okay. He cannot, you know, they say sticks and stones cannot, you know what they say, you know, words can, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words, they cannot hurt me. And we always tell our children, she will come and say, oh, you know, my friend, she called me an idiot or she called me stupid. And then they start crying. They say, by her calling you stupid, do you become stupid? No. So similarly, by her being mean to me or saying bad things, I don't become any less because I am Brahman. I'm occupying this body and my name is Sudha and this, but actually I am none of those. So it makes you, you then become higher than that. And that is called evolution. That is, so slowly with this understanding, you rise above that. And you say, okay, if he does it, that's his problem. He doesn't want to talk to me, that is his problem.
But that only comes with listening.
Yes, yes. Again and again listening. That's why when, you know, the Swamiji's come every month, so, you know, spend time with them, listen to them. You know, sit with them, offer them lunch or dinner, and you can ask these questions. Just being in their presence, I find, is very uplifting. So yeah, the more you listen and the more you associate with saints, the clearer it becomes. Repeated listening, Shravana, Shravana, even you are telling me that again and again, listening is very important. So the more you listen, it becomes more clearer in the mind. And same thing, it's the same thing, you know, every week you say, oh, it's the same thing. But something sometime hits you more than others. And I have been listening to it for 25 years, since 1990, on a regular basis. Even today, in my car, I keep Swami Bodhatmananda Ji's or somebody's commentaries or Swami Shantananda Ji. And every time I hear the commentary, I get something new. That's how I'm able to explain and give all these examples, because of just repeated listening. Sometime or the other, something strikes. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Mangaschit Durga Bhavati. Om Shanti, 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 Hari. Thank you.